Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
In the months before the 2016 presidential election in the United States, American psychologist Lori Helgo grew increasingly concerned. She worried a little about the campaigns. She worried more about the public's reaction to them. Americans' comments on social media seemed to be filled with either extreme praise or extreme criticism, Helgo told VOA in a telephone interview. Many of the comments focused especially on the personality of then-candidate Donald Trump. Helgo observed that few people could let go of their strong feelings. Helgo was so worried that she wrote a book to help people deal with what she calls a dangerous situation in the U.S. today. The book is titled Fragile Bully: Understanding Our Destructive Affair with Narcissism in the Age of Trump. Helgo is a professor at the Ross University School of Medicine in the Bahamas. A simple definition of the word narcissism is self-interest, doing and saying what is good for you. Some self-interest is important, Helgo notes, but someone who carries the idea too far may not be able to understand other people's ideas or feelings. And someone who is very extreme may insist on keeping the attention on himself or herself at all times, then become hurt when criticized. Helgo notes that narcissism as a true mental disorder is rare. Instead, she says, levels of narcissism differ among people. Levels may also differ from culture to culture. For example, she reports that in one study, American researchers joined with scientists from China, Turkey, Spain, and the United Kingdom. They found that people in those countries believed Americans, as a group, were more narcissistic than people from their own countries. Helgo says the finding could suggest that parts of American culture urge people to be narcissistic. For example, the U.S. is a center for movies and television, so people who can pull attention to themselves are often seen as successful. And in general, Americans also believe standing out as an individual is good. In brief, narcissism sells, and it creates a following, says Helgo. Even if people dislike what he or she says, someone who can hold others' attention has power. But narcissism can also be damaging, Helgo warns, especially if it is extreme. She points to the origins of the word narcissism. It comes from an ancient Greek story. In the story, a beautiful young man named Narcissus refuses the attention of a female spirit called Echo. Instead, Narcissus falls in love with an image of himself he sees in some water. The two become trapped. Echo cannot speak her own words. Instead, she can only repeat what Narcissus says. And Narcissus cannot move, even to eat or drink, because he does not want to stop looking at himself. In time, they both die. This kind of damaging interaction can describe being in a relationship with an extreme narcissist, says Helgo. It can feel like a dance. It sometimes feels like no matter how you respond, you are trapped, she says. She says people who are around extreme narcissists often feel deep anger or rage because they are dismissed. But when they fight the narcissist, the person claims she or he is the real victim. Even those who accept an extreme narcissist are in a difficult position. They may enjoy the feelings of energy and power he or she brings, but they always risk being sent away. In time, both those who resist and those who support an extreme narcissist may become small, Helgo says. They may become extremely negative. They may feel helpless and pull away in sadness. Or they may connect so strongly with the narcissist that they lose the ability to think for themselves. In all cases, they come to copy the narcissist, like Echo in the Greek story. Helgo says she sees some of these problems in the U.S. today. Even though the title of her book includes the word Trump, she does not make any judgments about the U.S. president. Instead, she notes that ties are increasing among social media, politics, and entertainment. As a result, people who can make others follow them, push for causes, and create strong feelings are gaining power in American society. Their power can be a problem if they care more about their self-interest or self-image than about the needs of the community. Helgo warns that in these situations, the public must be careful. She says people in a relationship with a narcissist can come to enjoy the strong feelings he or she creates. The feelings can act like a drug. Protecting your group can be fun. Deep anger can also be fun, Helgo notes. And seeing someone with whom you are angry be punished can be really fun. But the strong feelings hurt us, Helgo says. They hurt our relationships with other people, and they hurt our own mental health. They also demand we spend a lot of time thinking about what Helgo calls poisonous ideas. She advises people who are around narcissists to soften their feelings a little bit. Do not give attention so easily to someone who wants only to stir you up, to affect you intensely. The world is a more benign place than what it looks like in a narcissistic narrative, Helgo says. In other words, the world is gentler and safer than narcissists want you to believe. Do not fall for their stories. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Being able to find high-quality health care at an affordable price is an issue in many countries. In the United States, Walmart, a large chain store, is trying to help. It is offering something new to its employees, cutting the cost of a doctor's appointment to only $4. The Associated Press news agency notes that Walmart once required its employees to pay $40 for the same service. Why is the price so low, you might ask? What's the catch? The catch is that the patient and doctor must meet electronically over the internet. This online service is called telemedicine. Walmart is the latest major business in the United States to push its workers toward a high-tech way to be examined and treated by doctors. Thanks to telemedicine, people can talk with medical experts from the privacy of their own homes, often using a secure video connection. Many in the U.S. healthcare industry see this as a good time to teach people how telemedicine services can help them. The AP reports that widespread use of smartphone technology, an easing of rules, and employer interest are all fueling the expansion of telemedicine. Supporters say online visits make it easier for patients to see an expert or quickly find help for problems considered non-emergencies. But many people continue to go to the doctor's office when they are sick. Some areas of healthcare seem like a good choice for telemedicine. It can help people seeking treatment for insect bites or skin conditions. Patients who have had medical treatments and cannot move around easily can use telemedicine for their follow-up visits. Also, people seeking help for mental health issues can benefit from the privacy that telemedicine gives. But generally, Americans have been slow to try virtual health care. The AP reports that 80% of middle-size and large U.S. companies offered telemedicine services to their workers in 2018. That is up from only 18% in 2014. However, the AP found that only 8% of eligible employees used telemedicine at least once in 2017. This seems to support what many healthcare experts say. People are often not willing to change their way of thinking about healthcare. Compared with seeing a real doctor in person, some people may think the quality of telemedicine is not as good. Parents, for example, may feel they are not giving their child the best care if they use a virtual doctor appointment. Older adults may also not want to see a doctor online. Experts say that one reason may be that older people may look forward to their in-person doctor appointments. The company Insight Telepsychiatry provides virtual mental health services. Jeffrey Boyce, the head of the company, spoke with the AP about the people who use telemedicine. Boyce explained that going to the doctor's office is a big event in the lives of many older people. He said it is something they look forward to. Another reason some adults may not use telemedicine services is trust. Tom Hill, age 66, lives in the state of Indiana. Hill told the AP he has no plans to ever use telemedicine. He does not buy anything online,
let alone do something as personal as seeing a doctor. He says for him, it is important to look his doctor in the eye and shake hands. However, for some people, such as young people and busy students, telemedicine might be a good choice. It can cut down on the time away from work. It can also cut down on the cost of doctor visits. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By 1863, America's northern states and southern states had been fighting a bitter civil war for 2 years. Both sides felt the pressure of the costly struggle. The South was beginning to suffer from a lack of supplies and men for its armies. The North was beginning to suffer from a lack of fighting spirit. Larry West and Tony Riggs describe an anti-war movement that was growing.
Many Americans in northern states did not support the war policies of Union President Abraham Lincoln. Some said openly that they did not care who won the war. They just wanted to be left alone. Coal miners in Pennsylvania protested against a law drafting men into the Union Army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to Pennsylvania to put down the riots. Farmers in Ohio also protested. They refused to be drafted. They attacked soldiers who were sent to arrest them. The worst anti-war riots, however, took place in New York City.
On July 13th, 1863, a crowd formed outside a New York draft office. Inside, Army officials were choosing the names of men who would be taken into the Army. Each name was written on a separate piece of paper. The papers were mixed together in a big box. The officials then began to remove the papers, one at a time. They made a list of the names. These were the men of New York who must go off to fight. On that day, however, the list was never completed. The crowd outside the draft office became louder. There were shouts of protest against the draft and against the Civil War.
Suddenly, a stone crashed through the office window, then another, and another. The army officials escaped, but a policeman inside could not get away. The rioters beat him badly. Then they set fire to the draft office and several buildings nearby. The riot spread across the city. The riot began as a political protest against the draft. Poor men opposed the draft because it permitted rich men to escape military service. The law said a man who was drafted could stay out of the army by doing one of two things. He could pay the government $300, or he could pay another man to serve in his place. If a drafted man could not do either thing, then he must join the army or be shot as a deserter.
In the wartime economy of the North, prices were rising much faster than wages. Even a man with a good job had a difficult time feeding his family. It was impossible for him to pay the government $300 or pay someone else to serve for him in the army. Poor men protested against the law. They said it was unfair. "It's a rich man's war," they cried, "but a poor man's fight. The rich man's money against the poor man's blood."
There was something else that deeply troubled working men in the North. Anti-war activists told them that the war was not being fought to save the Union, but to free Negro slaves. The activists said the freed Negroes would move north and take jobs away from whites. Many men believed this. They said they would not fight.
Then, on July 13th, the angers and fears of working men in New York exploded. Their attack on the draft office that day was just the beginning. The violence lasted 3 days. The rioters beat many policemen to death. They beat, burned, and hanged every Negro they could find. They also killed many whites who tried to protect the Negroes. By the time soldiers stopped the rioting, 1,000 persons had been killed.
The leaders of the anti-war movement in the North were members of the opposition Democratic Party. They wore on their coats a copper penny showing the head of a Native American Indian. This gave them the name Copperheads. One important Copperhead was a former congressman from Ohio, Clement Vallandigham. Vallandigham made a speech criticizing the Union government. He was charged with violating a military law that banned such criticism. He was arrested.
The former congressman was taken before a military court. He objected. He said if he had broken a law, he should be tried by a civilian court. He demanded this as his constitutional right. The military judges rejected his argument. They found him guilty, and they sentenced him to remain in a Union military prison until the end of the war. People throughout the North were angry. Many did not support Clement Vallandigham's ideas, but they supported his right to speak freely. President Lincoln could approve or reject Vallandigham's sentence. His decision would show which issue was more important, the citizens' right to free speech or national security.
Lincoln was a good politician and a smart lawyer. He found an unexpected way to deal with the problem. He neither approved nor rejected the sentence. He changed it. Lincoln ordered Vallandigham to be turned over to the Confederate Army. Then he explained that Vallandigham had not been arrested for criticizing the government. His arrest was made, Lincoln said, because he was trying, with some success, to prevent men from entering the army. He was urging soldiers already in the army to leave it. Mr. Vallandigham was not arrested because he was damaging the political chances of the administration or the interests of the commanding general, but because he was damaging the army, upon which the life of the nation depends. The Confederates welcomed the anti-war leader. They helped him get to Canada. Vallandigham continued his anti-war campaign from there.
President Lincoln was troubled by the anti-war movement and violent opposition to the draft laws. He felt he had to make citizens understand why such laws were necessary. He prepared a speech which explained his thoughts. "There can be no army without men," Lincoln wrote. "Men can be had only with their permission or without it. We can no longer get enough men willingly. So there is a draft. If you dispute this and declare that men are still willing to serve in the army, then prove it by volunteering yourselves in large numbers. Then I will give up the draft."
Lincoln never gave this speech. He felt it was too direct. Instead, he gave a different kind of speech to the people of the Union. "You want peace," Lincoln said, "and you blame me that we do not have it. But how can we get it? There are but three ways possible. First, to put down the Southern Rebellion by force of arms. This I am trying to do. Are you for it? If you are, then we are so far agreed. If you are not for it, a second way is to give up the Union. I am against this. Are you for the Union? If you are, you should say so clearly. If you are not for force and not for dissolving the Union, there only remains some kind of compromise. I do not believe any such compromise is possible."
Politicians urged President Lincoln to investigate the anti-war protests in New York to learn who had led them. He refused. Lincoln believed that starting an investigation would be like lighting a barrel of gunpowder. He already was fighting a bitter struggle against rebels in the South. He did not want to fight the people of the North, too. Southern leaders were pleased with the Copperheads' anti-war movement. Confederate General Robert E. Lee saw it as a sign of weakness in the Northern war effort. He also saw it as an opening for a military victory.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.